Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
What in the world is happening on Wall Street?
Economic indicators.
Who knows where this is going to end up?
To understand the economy, you have to understand human nature.
This podcast is powered by Acast.
How are you doing there? It's David. Listen, you're getting a cornucopia of podcasts this week. A cornucopia. One on Tuesday, one on Wednesday, and one on Thursday. Now, we put one out on Wednesday. Robert Fisk, a man I got to know pretty well over the years, really shocked to hear his passing. We did a lovely conversation with Robert about Saudi Arabia. And if you fancy listening to Robert Fisk, and you always should, a great loss to journalism. And hearts go out to his wife, also Nellifer. Very, very interesting woman, very lovely woman. Anyway, have a listen to that podcast. But today, it's all America, Johnny boy.
What did I tell you, Mac? What did I tell you? I've been saying it all the way through. Never discount Trump. And in fairness, like, we spoke to Kev earlier on the week. We talked about the polling, and all the polls had Biden not way up, but you know,
pretty much,
you know, between what, four and eight percent.
Yeah.
And it never sat well with me. So it still remains to be seen if.
We're down the wire now, aren't we?
Yeah. So it remains to be seen who, if he's going to make it or not. But just don't discount him until the very end.
Gives a very, very different interpretation of the expression going postal, doesn't it? But there you go. Listen, let's go straight. It's all America today. We don't know who's really winning. We don't know who's won, let's say, at the end. I don't think anybody does. But let's go all the way to Kansas City, to Tom Frank. Tom Frank, talk to me. Talk to me. How's your head? How are you feeling?
Mr. McWilliams.
What's going
on?
I'm
fine. I drank plenty of water. I interspersed my bouts of you know, beer consumption with water, so I'm fine. And look, I think it's a great day when the entire political establishment of America gets proven wrong again. I love that. That puts a big smile on my face. I love to see that happen. And the good thing is it happened, and it looks like Trump is not going to be reelected. So best of both worlds.
What happened? Talk to me. Because, you know, we're trying to make some sense of your country.
Well, it looks like, first story is all the political experts were wrong. Okay. So they said it was going to be overwhelming Democratic victory. They said, if not a landslide for Biden. I love it when political science just does a complete face plant, which is what they did. I mean, it's just absolutely beautiful. And I don't know what went wrong for them. I mean, I'm not a pollster. I don't follow that. You know, I don't do any of that kind of thing. But it is hilarious that it's now happened two elections in a row. Clearly, Trump is a wild card. I'm inclined to think it's because there's a social stigma attached to him. And I think that we have been underestimating the, everybody says this election is a referendum on Trump. And so it is, right? But it's also a referendum on us, on the liberals, on, I'm not you, I mean, but, and not me either, really, but on the kind of people who, you know, the politics of scolding, what I write about all the time. This is so offensive to people. I mean, how can a guy, Trump is this close to being reelected? This is a failed president. This is a guy that, you know, has no idea what he's doing, absolutely bungled the pandemic. The economy is in free, you know, was, I mean, he bailed out his friends, right? They did fine. Everybody else is like, every restaurant in Washington, D.C. is going out of business. You know, it's a disaster for everybody else. He just about got reelected. That's incredible. That tells you two things. First of all, there's something else going on here. Usually the economy, the pandemic, that's all that decides, right? It's, yeah. I think I said that to you before. Fundamentals. Something else is going on, and it's still the culture wars. The culture wars are still incredibly powerful, and we, the liberals, walked right into the buzzsaw, spent the last 4 years calling him a Russian agent when he was nothing of the sort. There's no evidence for it. Yeah, he's a blowhard, and he's a jerk, and he's an asshole, but why not stick with that?
He isn't, you know, KGB material. He's not KGB
exactly.
material.
Exactly.
They're clever fuckers. Why,
yeah, I know. and calling him a dictator, like the guy had every chance to become a dictator in this pandemic. Like people are calling for him to go out there and do a national clampdown or whatever, and he won't do it. You know, he's not a dictator.
So he doesn't
that. Really bad. He's a terrible president, but he's not like this nightmare Hitler, Stalin, you know, mashup. You know, he's not that.
No, and the interesting thing is he doesn't have, it's very, I mean, because it's very easy to caricature, he doesn't have that autocratic urge to clamp down, to shut down, to do all these sort of things. But
he would have used it, but he does have, he is a loudmouth, and he is a, I mean, he'll say anything and he'll tweet anything. And he's incompetent and he's a fool, but like that wasn't good enough for the Dems. No, they had to go around and build this entire stereotype of the Trump voter, insult these people, build this social stigma around him. You know, you haven't been in America in recent years, but the climate of, you know, my friends have been canceled. You know, friends of mine have felt the sort of wrath of the politically self-righteous. It's utterly and absolutely unfair. And that's just for starters. I mean, there's so many chapters to what has happened in the last 4 years, all of them offensive. And I say this as a leftist, as someone who like agrees with, like, I agree with Black Lives Matter. You know, I agree with a lot of these people on a lot of things, but it's just like, it's staggering. And it's all to avoid looking the facts of 2016 in the face, anything to avoid that. And those facts are that the Democratic Party is losing its grip on the working class. And I don't just mean the white working class anymore. That's what I used to say, but look at what's happening.
And the Latino working class is moving towards Trump and some of the African-Americans.
It's,
but certainly Latinos are.
Slowly, I mean, it doesn't take much. I mean, it doesn't take a whole lot with those two groups, because they're so overwhelmingly Democratic. The Democrats completely rely on them, and then the Democrats go out there and nominate this guy, Biden, who's totally lackluster. I don't know if you've been following the news from America the last couple of weeks. Trump is doing these enormous rallies, like five of them every day. Yeah. Biden is doing nothing. Nothing. And look, I don't know if that by itself had any kind of impact, but I bet it did. You know, that's incredible that a man who just had COVID and is, how old is he, 75 years old or something, is going around the country doing this. That's unbelievable. And, you know, what is it about the Democrats that they're always drawn to these feckless, you know, these personalities that do nothing, that have no big ideas, that promise very little, that are just like, okay, nothing's going to fundamentally change. Remember Biden's notorious remark? By the way, I only recently started looking at Biden's advisors. You know who's advising him? It's like all my liberal friends are like, oh, maybe when he gets in, he'll show his progressive side. No. His advisors are like all these Clinton administration retreads.
It's the kind of Larry Summers, Rob Rubin types. I don't know if it's those guys but it's those type
it's,
of
no,
guys.
It's not those guys actually.
But it's the Harvard. It's the Harvard Wall Street Washington triumvirate, and you see that
the one that blew my mind is when I realized it's the architect of Clinton's welfare reform. Is his like
this
closest
is the welfare
domestic
welfare
as we know it, which was like exactly. one of the cruelest things that a Democrat has ever done, and that guy is advising, you know, no.
So the point is,
he just expected to cruise right back in to do nothing different, cruise right back in. He was going to eke out a little narrow victory by winning over suburban, white-collar, highly educated voters. He didn't even try, you know, to put together the old Roosevelt coalition, the old New Deal. You know, they don't even try to do that anymore.
So let's think about it. So you say, like, so at the moment, the narrative is, and tomorrow morning, the next day, because it does look like Biden might sneak it by a couple of votes, right?
It looks like he's going to.
But the narrative is going to say, this was a referendum on Donald Trump, and by a sliver, the people rejected it. Whereas you're saying, no, hold on a second. This was not a referendum just on Donald Trump. It was a referendum on the people who spend their summer holidays in Martha's Vineyard.
Hell yes. Absolutely. Because if you live in America and you turn on one channel and it's all Trump all the time, that's Fox News. You turn on another channel and they're scolding you constantly, telling you what a fool you are, what an asshole you are. That's CNN or that's MSNBC. And that is the little cultural universe that we live in here in America now. And, you know, if you're like me, well, they both disgust me, but for most Americans are, you know, they're
either
one.
That's why you're on here. That's why you're on here.
I know. I have to go to Ireland to have, you know, to have somebody listen to me, you know? I was on French TV last night. There was a time when I used to be on the radio and on TV in this country.
What happens is you go niche, then you go fringe, and then you go straight back to mainstream. It's going to happen, man. I can give you the playlist. I've done that gig. Where are we going to be? I can see, because by the way, we're having a chat. Tom is clearly in his parents' house in Kansas.
I see
your dad walking around behind.
he just turned 92 years old. I'm here for his birthday. He turned 92.
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday! Yeah. Tell me, how's he feeling about the whole thing?
Well, he. I think he supported Trump, and he's. I think he's feeling. I don't know. I haven't told him this morning that looks like Trump's going to lose.
Don't tell him.
My dad is a great man, but he. The funny story is he was born in 1928.
Wow.
A few days before the election, so Calvin Coolidge was president, but Herbert Hoover was about to be elected in a landslide, and Herbert Hoover was a great national hero, and so my grandmother named my dad for Herbert Hoover.
Is he Herbert Frank?
No, it's his middle name. He's one of the only, like, I went to the Herbert Hoover Library a while ago, and nothing in America is named for Herbert Hoover because, as you know, the Great Depression then took place. And he was hated forevermore. But in that brief period in 28, he was still a hero.
It was Herbert Hoover, your man Mellon, I told you about.
Yeah.
Mellon.
Yep.
And,
you know the story.
Yeah. And the economist, Irvin Fisher. Who,
yes.
The lesson to all economists, don't come out publicly absolutely certain of things. Because when things go wrong, Irvin Fisher was the biggest economist in the United States. Like the cap of the tutti capi. And he screwed up on the Great Depression.
Have you ever thought about it this way? We're kind of fortunate that guy discredited himself. The entire economics profession in this country discredited themselves in those days. And we're lucky they did, because that allowed Roosevelt to just sweep them aside and bring in people that were regarded at the time as cranks.
That's true.
Keynesianism.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he would never have had an opening for Keynesianism.
Otherwise, he'd still be on the gold standard.
Exactly. That's right.
And your and your friend Brian Jennings would have been still in the back.
Brian Jennings
was a bloke in my primary school.
I'm here in a state that Brian carried. This is Brian country out here.
But this is Kansas. When Kansas was radical.
They loved him. There's my dad.
There's your dad. How are you doing?
These are guys in Ireland. In Ireland. I kid you not.
He can't get a gig anywhere else. How did Kansas vote, by the way? Did you all go for Trump?
Yeah, I did. Here's the local newspaper.
Still counting. Well, at least they're hedging their bets.
But this county that I'm in is one of those wealthy suburban counties, and the Democrats have been trying to win, and they did win. So Biden won here, and I looked it up. This is when I was growing up. I grew up here. This was one of the most Republican places in America, like went for Barry Goldwater, went for Ronald Reagan. And the last time it voted for a Democrat was 1916, 104 years. Yeah, 104 years ago. And Kansas is very, very Republican.
So you're in the sort of place where the PhD per square mile index is very, very high. And they're now all voting. They're the kids of rich Republicans who got really hyper-educated and now like the whole Wokepedia stuff and are voting Democrat.
But a guy like Biden is perfect for them. They're like, they've got Black Lives Matter banners in their front yard, but they don't want, they're worried about the deficit. They don't want that universal health care. They don't want that. No. Biden's going to veto that. I was just thinking last night, I was talking with my friends. It's like, Biden could have had it in a landslide if he just said, okay, as soon as I get in, everybody gets health care. You don't have to worry about it. We're going to get out of this epidemic. Everybody gets universal health care. You don't have to worry about surprise billing. You don't have to worry about going bankrupt. It's done. You know what would have happened? It's like, this would have been this crushing victory, instead he's like, no, we're going to like fiddle with Obamacare. This system that nobody understands, we're going to tinker with it around the edges and like make it slightly more affordable for this group. But it has to be means tested for this other group. And, no one wants that.
But listen, Tom, in terms of analysis, right? The next 4 years, even if Biden sneaks it, Trumpism is here to stay.
Yes, yes.
And the neurosis in the Democratic Party is not going away.
It's also, exactly, because they will not listen. Remember the title of the book, Listen Liberal. They won't.
And what about Trumpism?
It's some of my friends are saying that Trump himself will try again. And I think he'll be too old in 2024. But his son, Don Jr., his daughter, Ivanka, they both have ambitions. Tucker Carlson. There's a whole bunch of Republican senators but they're all miniature Trumps. It's just, they're smarter than Trump. Trump is, you got to remember, Trump's a fool. Like, this guy doesn't have, he doesn't even know how to do politics. He does these rallies and people like him, but he does not know how to do politics. And a real politician would with Trump's, doing what Trump has done, reaching out for the working class in all these ways other than economic, they're going to win. That's going to succeed down the road,
So you think Joe Biden could be the last Democratic president for a long time?
Oh, come on. No, who the hell knows? Who the hell knows? That's impossible to say. Look, you've got a two-party system locked in by law in this country. It doesn't matter how bad the Democrats get, and it doesn't matter how crazy the Republicans get. They always have a chance. You got to remember that. It doesn't matter. They always have a chance.
Okay, Tom, listen.
Mr. McWilliams.
We will talk to you.
I got to go.
Go fly. We'll see you. Happy flight and all that safe. Wear a mask. No, don't wear a mask.
I am going to wear a mask.
You'll be hissed at in the airport. Okay, Tom, good to talk to you.
All right. Cheers, Tom. See you later.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Okay, so that was Tom there having a go, John, at pollsters, big time.
Yeah, but I think he's so funny, isn't he?
Yeah, but he's got it and won. It's his idea. It's not just a referendum on Trump.
Yeah,
as all the liberals want to say, it's a referendum on the liberals too. And frankly, nobody comes out of this smelling of roses at all.
Yeah, yeah. But come here, you mentioned the Clinton welfare thing. Can you remind me of that?
So Clinton was obsessed by what he called triangulation. And this was Clinton's big strategy, was to try and find the place between the Republicans and the hard line, which he would describe as Democrats, i.e. the more left Democrats, find the small space that he could get into. And he tacked to the left initially with his healthcare reform. We wouldn't regard it as left at all. We would think it's totally normal. But, you know, I mean, they call it reform. It's like having public healthcare.
Yeah, well, we kind of consider left is normal, don't we?
Yeah, well, that's it's true, actually. But, and Hillary Clinton was the prime mover in his healthcare reforms.
Right.
And that's when Hillary Clinton began to become the target of the right. And you might know, I interviewed her a couple of years later.
Yeah.
And it was very much part of the background noise in the interview. It was very clear to me, even talking to her, that she was very tetchy about the right. But she was actually also incredibly funny and giggly off camera, which was a strange...
Nice.
But yeah, and really good fun, giggly. Then on camera, she went into this sort of presidential mode.
The many faces of
many
Hillary.
Faces. But so what Bill Clinton was trying to do, Bill Clinton engineered what Tom Frank doesn't like, which is the centralization or the centrist dad approach. You know this expression, centrist dad,
they have
in the UK, that he would go to the center, right?
Yeah.
And part of that was he was being dragged by Newt Gingrich, you might remember.
I do remember
over
him.
To the right. Mm. So Clinton thought, well, how do I actually get back to the center? The right wing are talking all about welfare cheats, etc. To which the great Neil Young came out with a great song called Welfare Mothers Make Best Lovers in response to the right wing. This is all the sort of weird shit you get in this thing. But he tried to dismantle the welfare system. So the big idea was that he tried to make welfare conditional on behavior.
Right? Okay, yeah.
And his slogan was welfare, but not as we know it, or welfare as we know it now. That was the idea.
Okay,
the changed
right.
idea.
Yeah.
Now, of course, that was basically to drag the Republicans, or to push the Republicans away, to drag the Democrats into the center, but also, interestingly for economics, to appease the bond market, because the bond market had consistently been aggressively anti-Clinton.
Right.
And every time he tried to increase welfare budgets or health budgets, they would sell the long bond, they'd sell the US bond. So there was this idea of bond vigilantes who were policing the Democrats on behalf of the Republicans. This was a big thing. This was a real thing in the 1990s, which is why James Carville, did you ever hear of the Raging Cajun?
I'm going to say no.
The Raging Cajun was a Cajun guy, right?
Yeah.
Called, it's like University Challenge. The buzzer. Raging Cajun was a guy called James Carville. Came up with two great expressions, right? Regarding the bond vigilantes who were policing the White House by attacking the Clinton regime or the Clinton administration. He said, when I come back, if there's ever reincarnation, I want to come back as the bond market with with a big stick because they were so powerful.
Yeah, yeah.
He also, interestingly, said something about Pennsylvania because, you know, if you look at Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania is named after William Penn, who was originally from East Cork.
Right, okay.
That's where he was born, right? William
Didn't
Penn was born
now.
In East Cork, right? Shangari, you know that place?
Yeah.
Shangari, that's where he was born, right? Pennsylvania, Philadelphia is the home of the American Constitution.
Mm.
This is a place. So when you think of Pennsylvania, you think it's kind of up there beside New York, it's up there beside, you know, the Northeast.
Yeah, yeah.
And you get this sense that it's a Northeastern state, but Carville described it beautifully. Very Clinton-esque. He said, Pennsylvania, there's two big cities, Pittsburgh and Philadelphia.
Yeah.
He said, it's like New York in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, and the rest is Alabama.
Nice,
and that's what we're
nice.
Seeing. That's what we're seeing now.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So all good. So that was the Clinton expression.
Right. Do you know the other big story of the election that no one's talking about is Kanye? Kanye got 57,000 votes in total. In total.
So...
But he's not put off by it. He says he's coming back in 2024. Now, I'm not sure if it's going to be him or the hologram.
Well, look, America's so mental. It's not inconceivable that the Trump family office will fight the next election. Ivanka yeah. are the
oh, yeah, 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 yeah. I think that's a strong possibility.
And Kanye and your one Kardashian.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of mad. It is a big reality TV show.
Yeah, yeah.
And fascinatingly, it'll be interesting to see who the Democrats come up with.
Oprah.
There you go.
Yeah.
On the couch.
On the couch, yeah.
There the Oprah go. Book Club. Here we go. Yeah, but you see, could you imagine if it was Oprah versus Ivanka versus yeah. Kanye? Okay, imagine the polls.
Yeah.
Faced with that. Imagine all the nerds, all the people who talk about policy and economics and the bond market and the budget deficit. And you've got these three
yeah.
going for it. You know, if the polls got it wrong this time.
But you know what might happen is that Trump might set up his own polling organization. And it'd be totally different to everybody else.
Fake polls.
Fake polls.
You can keep your polls. But speaking of fake polls, it's not often that I can say that one profession are less credible than economists. There are weathermen, weatherwomen, economists, and that top of the feckin' pile, there are pollsters.
Pollsters.
Pollsters, pollsters.
Yeah.
We've got one of them on now, Kevin. Kevin Cunningham, we've been bigging you up. We've been bigging up your trade even for quite some time. We're looking at the American numbers. Now, in fairness, you did give us a heads up. You did give us a warning that the polls could be wrong. Kev, explain your trade. Explain what's going on. Because it looks to me like this is... You remember when most of the economists in the world didn't see the 2008 financial crisis coming? This strikes me as something broadly similar for polls. It's a big crisis.
It's a huge crisis. You know, a lot of these polling companies would have adjusted. They would have been very conscious of the mistakes that were made in 2016. And for the mistakes to go again in the same direction. I mean, bear in mind, you know, the polls in Michigan were staggeringly large leads. And even at that, they were still trying to be cautious about possibilities of how things might or might not go the right way. There's a couple of plausible explanations for this. There's the shy voter, which people talk about. I don't believe that really at all, in fact. I mean, a lot of polls are conducted online and there's no discernible shyness among Trump supporters. And any sort of mechanism to try to understand whether they are shy has failed to kind of see that. And also, you know, when you're able to ask someone how they voted last time and they say they voted for Trump and then they're saying they're voting for Trump again this time, then you should be able to capture that kind of shy effect. The bigger problem is definitely about turnout. And this has always been the problem with public opinion polls. I think I might have mentioned this previously, but, you know, the people that respond to opinion polls, especially, say, telephone polls, where only 1 in 20 are actually answering the phone, are not people who are kind of everyday people. They're not people who are, you know, as engaged with politics. So you have to make a lot of adjustments and you have to try to figure out what those voters look like. So to my mind, the big mistake was if you look at these polls as they were prior to the election, Biden was retaining 95 or 96% of the Clinton 2016 vote. Trump was equivalently retaining a very similar percentage. The reason why it was predicated that Biden was going to win this election was because he was winning lots of people, according to the polls, lots of non-voters and other voters or whatever. And I think the problem in polling is an inability to actually capture a representative picture of that non-voter. He was winning 2-1, but actually, evidently, that doesn't appear to have been the case. I mean, he's done relatively well among older voters, as the poll suggested. He's done relatively worse among Cubans and African-Americans. But how those people have turned out or not turned out hasn't been appreciated by the polling companies at all, in fact. One of the interesting assertions, I think, in polling is that, you know, it's very difficult. And I was chatting to one major polling company that completely got it wrong and is usually very good. They had difficulties in trying to find African-Americans, same as last time. And the problem with that is we have this assumption that, you know, if in previous elections, say 90% of African-Americans or a very high proportion of Latinos vote a certain way, then the assumption is that, oh, well, sure, if only the rest would turn out, then we'd get a much higher support for our party. Well, actually, what a lot of that is if you think about it, why aren't they voting? They're not enthusiastic about their preference. It's not just socioeconomic reasons for less likely to turn out. But actually, if you think about it, all the evidence suggests that there are psychological, almost genetic reasons for people to be left or right. And so to assume that everyone who is African-American or everyone who is Latino is instinctively left-wing and agrees with the policy agenda of the left-wing party, the Democrats. I think that's a false assertion. So when that demographic does increase in turnout, I think you're more likely to find more people who are just naturally more right of centre, whether that be on the economy or whatever it might be. And I think those are the people that have maybe surprised people when they suddenly turned out, when they got, you know, excited by Donald Trump, I guess. And perhaps because maybe they're doing better than they were previously. I really don't know about that. But, you know, when they have turned out in larger numbers, it appears that thing has balanced out a little bit more between, you know, their relative support for Democrat or Republicans. And I think that's a major feature of where polling has got wrong in this particular election.
Well, it's interesting, Kev, because in all of these populist versus establishment, let's say, dogfights, whether it's in the UK or whether it's in the US, and even Le Pen up until the very last round in France, okay, when it just became an either or, what seems to be the case is the polls overestimate the establishment old school character and they underestimate the popular insurgency. And this seems to be like a fault that we've seen again and again. So interestingly, it's not that they didn't pick up people who didn't vote in the past, or it's not that they didn't pick up people who were encouraged to vote now, is they defaulted to a position that doesn't seem to make any sense, even given what we know in the last five or six big elections worldwide.
Yeah, I think you're on to a very interesting point there. And actually, it's something I hadn't really quite considered until you mentioned it. But if you think about the question, there's a question that always that is really successful at predicting whether someone's going to vote for a populist party or not. And it's the question of, do you think the people rather than politicians should be running the show, running the country or whatever it might be? And people who are kind of populist tend towards this idea of the people. I mean, what the people actually means is a side point. But it stems from a lack of trust in the system and lack of trust in the establishment and that sort of stuff. And I think when I'm asking someone, like as a pollster, to engage in a public opinion poll, they tend to be people who feel that there is a point to contributing their opinion. There is, you know, they have some level of trust in the system and some level of trust in the subject. Like there's a whole, you know, there's a lot of people who would vote for Brexit party and lots of kind of populist parties. But there's actually another rake of people that never vote even outside them, who are completely disaffected by the system. Like they don't even touch the political system at all. They don't care at all. And, you know, they only rarely come in on massive waves. I don't know if this is that kind of wave, but you know, I'm always wary of, you know, when we do a poll, we really don't account for those people. I mean, there's lots of people that are just impossible to get. I mean, even really at the fringes. I mean, you'll never have a homelessness of someone who's homeless in your opinion poll because, like, they don't have a home to answer the landline in the first place, right? Or, you know, you won't have people who are on holiday or people who are away or people who are in jail or any of those things. There's lots of just little reasons why people won't be represented in the poll. And I think that's just another feature of this. But, you know, one of the reasons why I was kind of concerned, we were talking about this before, about the idea of doing a lot of chats with some switchers. One of the reasons for that was because 95% of people were voting for the same party in this election. And in the previous election, like 80,000 people switched it between Clinton and Trump. Like if 80,000 or 0.06% of the vote had voted differently in 2016, you would have had Hillary Clinton as president. So, like, a lot of the narrative, I think, out of an election is focuses on, you know, oh, you know, the winner seems to write the story of what happened. But a lot of what's happening is really just this small number of people that are moving between the two parties. And I think those are the interesting people. And to be honest, I don't think you can actually get their attitudes from merely an opinion poll. I think you need to talk to them. I think you need to really engage with them in a much deeper level to try to see any similarities between the types of people that are deciding these elections.
And Kevin, I mean, I know, for example, that you did that. You decided, okay, there is this person out there who is neither left nor right, neither liberal nor conservative, neither Democrat and a Republican, is a melange of different ideas. You went to the States, you did your own polling. You didn't go to the States, you went over Facebook, you did your own polling. What did you find out? I mean, who are these people who switched from, let's say, Clinton to Trump this time around, i.e. they would have been assumed a Biden voter, they went for Trump, and vice versa, somebody who would have been assumed a Trump voter who went for Biden. Who are the people? Just give me a colour, a flavour, a sketch.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is the key question, right, isn't it? So, as I say, I did this big poll, tried to identify that tiny number, and then chatted with them on these half an hour Zoom conversations, and in small groups. Like, I only had groups of two at most at any one time, to try to really get and to talk to them in a personal way, like a large focus group and that sort of stuff. You're still going to run into problems where people are kind of conscious about what they want someone else to hear them say. So you want to make them feel as comfortable as possible, and it takes a while to kind of get those real thoughts and kind of what you want to get, I think, is, and you're never going to get this in an opinion poll, is kind of them getting emotional about something. And that's their kind of deeper feelings about something, right? So in terms of, let's say, the Clinton-Trump switch, right? I found that, I mean, it might have been a slight coincidence, but quite a lot of these were women in this particular case. And there are people who had voted for Clinton because they had liked Clinton as a female candidate. They spoke about that. And they were unsure of Donald Trump in terms of the men, because he was an outsider, whatever. Okay, so there were some men who voted for Trump this time who didn't vote for him last time because he was now a politician. So it's funny how his anti-establishment in the first case was a disadvantage to some people. And for some others who, as I said, who had voted for Clinton last time, particularly women, they'd voted for her as a woman. But instinctively, when I'm talking to these people, they all were instinctively economically conservative. They were concerned about the economy more generally. I spoke to one Cuban person, young woman from Florida, who didn't vote in the previous election and had voted for Trump. And it was all about the economy. She was very concerned. None of them are like the type of person that you'd see, you know, with the Trump banner on the back of a pickup truck or whatever it is. Like, it's absolutely not those types of people whatsoever. And it's weird how the elections are often, you know, the narrative of an election is often built around the kind of evangelists of either party, but actually when they're determined by these people in the middle ground. So this Clinton-Trump switcher is economically conservative, concerned about the economy, and we know from the opinion polls, as much as the opinion polls might be right, we can see at least in them that he does relatively well in relation to the economy relative to any other issue. And he in fact leads on the economy relative to Joe Biden. And so that's definitely where they are. The other guys, the guys who've gone from Trump to Biden, in some ways they're actually quite similar. They're again economically conservative, small c conservative, right? They voted for Trump because, as one person put it, they have to look far behind the persona to see where his economic instincts are, right? But these guys switched to a person on the basis of coronavirus. And again, COVID is an issue where Biden led Donald Trump by a significant amount. So they just said directly that they would have voted for Donald Trump if it weren't for COVID. That was the single thing. And again, if you go back again, okay, obviously the polls aren't the most accurate, right? But at least if you compare the polls in Pennsylvania in the lead up to the election, where they were like, Biden was 5 points ahead at least, right? To before the crisis with coronavirus hit, Donald Trump was doing 5 points better. I mean, if you go back to February, any reasonable analysis of this election would suggest that Donald Trump was well on his way to winning it, because he was level in the states that he needed to win, and any expectation of an incumbency bounce for Donald Trump was going to lead him in that direction. I thought this whole thing about, I described Biden as a placeholder. They didn't agree with the Democrats. They all, even the ones who switched from one direction to the other, all seem to be quite concerned about the left-wing features of the Democrats. Now, personally, I kind of like AOC and all those guys, but, you know, these guys definitely didn't. They were very anxious about that subset of the Democratic Party, and they didn't agree with the Democrats ideologically. As one Ohio switcher from Trump to Biden said, he buried his head in the sand, and it was his sacking of experts and that put America behind the eight ball. So these are people who, like appreciate the importance of the economy, and that's what they're actually all concerned about. But also, as one person put it, you can't start the car if you don't have any wheels. Because I was concerned that, you know, over here, our narrative in relation to the coronavirus is like a bit of a balance between the economy and healthcare. You know, where do you stand on this spectrum? And in Ireland, Fine Gael, well, not Fine Gael voters, but Fianna Fáil voters and AIM 2 and the far right are more keen on the economic sphere. And, you know, the far left are actually the most likely to be cautious about COVID. But I found it interesting to find people who are economically conservative to be so concerned about COVID that they're driving their vote in that direction. But I wonder whether that's just because their experience with it has been very different. I mean, one of the people I spoke to in Michigan had had COVID, and she changed her mind because she'd had COVID and because she had voted for Donald Trump in the previous election and was voting for Biden in this one. And again, like, these are just a small number of people, but I'm pretty sure that, you know, if we were to say that getting rid of Donald Trump were to be a good thing, then perhaps COVID has had one significant impact on the world in that respect.
That's a really good place to close this one down, because it is fascinating. But we could go on for ages, but we've got a colour, we've got a little vignette of who these people are. So listen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
So Kev there, like, when we had him on Tuesday, he talked about how they changed the approach to polling and how they came up with the results. I think they're going to need to change it again.
Well, what I...
Big time.
I think you're absolutely right. And what I took out of that was the question you came up with. That is the most telling question you can ask somebody these days is, do you think the president or the prime minister or the Taoiseach or the people should make decisions? And that reveals a huge amount of your preferences. It reveals a huge amount of what you think about populism. And I come back to this idea of insiders and outsiders, John. That's what it's all about. The insiders, listen to Tom Frank. He's talking the same thing. The insiders cancel themselves out. And whoever speaks to this tiny, tiny disenfranchised outsiders, which is obviously getting bigger as each election happens, they're the people who win.
Well, it's interesting, though, because there is something like 30% or about 90 million evangelicals in the States. I call them American Taliban. And they don't give a monkeys about policy as such, because all they want, or indeed personality, all they want is to, the likes of overturn Roe v. Wade. They don't care how they get there at all. And they've always said this. And this was also the big problem with Amy Coney Barrett being appointed to the Supreme Court. So that's their game. And if it was Biden who was shouting and screaming to outlaw abortion and all that kind of stuff,
they would have for him.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it has at the end of empire feeling. I've always felt when the Romans ditched the gods and went for that Christianity malarkey, it was over. It's the same stuff. Now, while I have your ear, if you like the podcast, if you like what John and I are doing, if you like the stories, you like the research, if you want to learn economics, if you want to do a twice a month bespoke tutorial called Ask Mac, if you want to do the Any Questions and you want to listen and ask us questions, by all means, we would love to hear from you. So support us on Patreon, which is patreon.com/David McWilliams. It's probably the best few quid you're going to spend.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.